Today is Wednesday, October 3rd. This is a resumption of the women's Chumashir. We are starting Bereshit, Perek Yud Zayin. Okay, Rabotai. Okay, I want to welcome everybody back. Welcome some newcomers. We are up to Bereshit, Perek Yud Zayin. This is where we begin. Bereshit Perek Yud Zayin. Perek Tet Zayin had concluded with Hagar being driven out from Avram's house. A malach interceded on her behalf and petitioned HaKadosh Baruch Hu to spare her, which he did. And in addition, she gave birth to a child, Yishmael, and right now she is still living in Avram's house, and now the focus will shift to a second covenant that is made between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Avram. The first covenant we learned about, called the Brit Bein HaBetarim, the covenant that was made with the symbol of the cows being split and so on and so forth, and what it represented. And this will be the Brit between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Avram about Brit Milah. So the Torah states, Vayhi Avram ben tishim shana v'teisha shanim. Avram was 99 years old. The previous episode left off when Avram was 86 years old. So there is a gap in 13 years where the Torah reports no information about what happened to Avram in the interim of those 13 years. And it's not surprising that there are such gaps, because as the Ramban told us at the beginning of this parsha, there are only a handful of episodes which the Torah records about each of the Avot's life. This is not a running history about Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov or anybody else. The Torah carefully selects narratives which will somehow shed light on what might happen to their children, because that's part of the Ramban's theory, that everything in Sefer Bereshit is simply a blueprint for what's going to happen later. And the same is true when we get to Sefer Shemot. You'll find very few episodes describing Moshe until he assumes the mantle of leadership at age 80. And we know there are only two or three episodes that are described. That's the pattern of the Torah. So we have 13 years, nothing, no information whatsoever. Vayera Hashem el Avram, HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to Avram, Vayomer Elav, Ani El Shaddai, I am God. I'm just translating it loosely, but that's going to be a major focus. Hitalech lefanai v'heyeh tamim. Walk in front of me and be complete. Again, very loose translation, just to get us through the fact that we have to translate the pasuk. But as to what each phrase means will be the subject of today's focus by checking a variety of parshanim. As always, we start with Rashi. And Rashi says, trying to identify why HaKadosh Baruch Hu reveals himself to Avram here, and it will be the pattern throughout the rest of Sefer Bereshit. This name, El Shaddai, is the name which God will use when he interacts with all of the Avot, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and their respective wives. So there will be a lot of discussion about the selection of that particular name. That's what Rashi decides to start off with. Ani El Shaddai. I am God, who literally translating Shaddai is enough. It's sufficient. So what does that mean? Says Rashi. Ani hu sheyesh dai be'elohuti l'chol beria. I am the God, and there I am the God who has Sheyesh Dai Be'elohuti B'chol Beria. All any creature needs is to recognize me as what? As their God. If every creature will recognize me as their God, then there will be no deficiencies for man. Mankind accepting God is, that's the only thing they need. They don't need any other suns or moons or intermediaries, nothing. All you need is me, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So how does Rashi interpret the phrase El Shaddai? I am the God that is the only God who is needed by every living creature. Doesn't even say L'chol Adam. Beria means any living creature. Every animal needs only me. And we emphasize that every single day when we recite Ashrei in that very famous pasuk, Poteach et Yadecha U'masbia L'chol Chai Ratzon. That with His will, He is willing to feed and take care of for every living creature. Correct? Correct? All of mankind. That's correct. That is correct. That's how Rashi interprets the phrase. In which case, and here is the weakness why others will not be very happy with Rashi, the name is not necessarily unique to Avraham. This statement could have been made about every little creepy ant. It's not necessarily unique to Avraham. It's El Shaddai L'chol Beria. And doesn't really tell us why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu choose to reveal Himself on a continuous basis with the Avot. And then as we segue into Sefer Shmot, and Moshe becomes the real, the main character on stage, I don't think the Torah ever uses the name El Shaddai in the context of a discussion with Moshe and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Never. It seems to be limited to the Avot. So therefore, there will be other interpretations which make it more on a personal level what might be El Shaddai in relationship to Avraham and then subsequently Yitzchak and Yaakov. So, but that's how Rashi interprets it.
What's the
Pitron? What is that? Right. No, that's Pitaron is with a tough, the one that you're thinking about. That ones who you provide a solution. That's
okay.
With a tet.
Okay, so what? This is Pitur.
What?
What is? This is release. What is
correct. It means that you should release or let go of any other forces because I am enough.
Oh, okay.
I am enough, and it should be the reason why you will release your belief in everything else in this world. And Rashi says that this is the way you should interpret this phrase every single time it appears in the Torah text. As I said, not everyone agrees. So I'm going to start off with something that the Rav once suggested, and it helps illuminate a very difficult passage where this name does appear in Parshat Va'era in Shmot chapter 6. God made numerous promises to each of the Avot. And the single greatest promise was that He's going to Lecha ulezaracha etena ta'aretz hazot. That's going to be, that phrase is going to be repeated, has already been stated to Avraham, will continue to be repeated. It will be repeated to Yitzchak, Yaakov, and going forward. And it was never fulfilled. Not during their lifetime. Not during their lifetime. So the Rav always suggested that El Shaddai is used by Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov based on the fact that He is the God Shaddai Behaftacha Levad. the God with whom the relationship between Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov and God did not require fulfillment of the promise. The promise alone was sufficient to enable Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov to place their entire allegiance in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And God uses this to get angry at Moshe. So please open up to Shemot chapter 6. Hey and Vav. End of Hey and beginning of Vav. Shemot chapter 6. So if you look at the end of Parashat Shemot, it's the end of Shemot, right before the beginning of Va'era. Many of you, I'm sure, know the episode. Right, but it starts at the end of Shemot.
Yeah.
Moshe, at the end of chapter 5, after his first appearance in Paro's court, Moshe delivers the message, "Please let my people go." What is Paro's reaction? They're lazy. Nirpim heim, nirpim. A bunch of lazy good-for-nothings. So what did he decide? Tichbad aleihem ha'avodah. Add more. Make their life even more difficult. And Rashi explains that the number of bricks that was assigned was not diminished, and yet nobody's going to provide the raw materials, the straw, whatever else was necessary to make the bricks. So they have to do it themselves. So what is Moshe's reaction? Vayashav Moshe El Hashem in chapter 5, Pasuk Chaf Bet, he says, Adonai, lama harayot lama zeb, lama zeb shalachtani. Why did you make life worse? Why did you send me? And from the moment I arrived at Paro's house to speak in your name, things have gotten considerably worse. And you did not provide a rescue for your people. Don't worry. You will soon see. Then you go to the beginning of Va'era. And God resumes, Vaidaber Elohim al Moshe v'Yamshem, Vo'era el Abraham Yitzchok be'el Yaakov be'el Shaddai, Ushmi Hashem lo nodati lahem. My doesn't mean he never used it. It means that I always appeared with Avraham, Yitzchok, and Yaakov, and I did not really appear frequently or possibly at all with my name Yud Hey Vav Hey with Avraham, Yitzchok, and Yaakov. The name Hashem, Yud Kei Vav Kei, Rashi will say 10 times in Chumash, at least. Ani Hashem, Ne'eman L'shalem. The name Hashem is indicative of the fact that I am prepared to fulfill what I said. Usually it means Sachar, if you follow your commandments. And it means that God is going to be willing to punish if you engage in transgression. So under those circumstances, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is angry at the Moshe. Why? I only made promises to Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And yet they never spoke the way you just did. You know, they didn't challenge me. You're punishing me. Well, what's wrong with you? You tell me I'm getting Eretz Yisrael, and nothing like of the sort happens. I have to bury my wife, and what's going to happen? I got to pay 400 silver pieces. What happened to your promise? And each one of the avot can say the same thing. So it is specifically a name, according to this, that God related to the avot, because the name suggests an El, the all-powerful one, who could have fulfilled it at a moment's notice. Vishadai, Shaddai. That the recipients were satisfied with the promise alone and never rebelled, never challenged HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why he's angry at Moshe. But in which case, it's not just a broad name that God, the way Rashi indicates, it's a name selected and targeted for the Avot. That's a second interpretation. Now if you take your sheet for just a moment, and you start with page number 40, that's Severino. He's pitching tonight. So you got to know. He's pitching. You don't have Severino pitching tonight? Okay. That's your loss. And the next page is 99. That's the judge. Of course. That's all. That's all. So, we'll start with the Ramban on page 40, where it starts El Shaddai. Shnei Shemot. These are two separate names. Kol Echad To'ar La'atzmo. Each one is its own independent, literally an, you know, adjective or noun, depending how Rashi uses the word To'ar. Upiresh El Takif. Everyone agrees that the name El represents power and strength of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Milashon Elei Moav. In the Shira we say that when Am Yisrael crossed the Yam Suf, Elei Moav, what happened to them? But, what? Yochazemo. Which means fear. The powerful ones of Moab were fearful when God made his appearance over the Yam Suf. So the word El is generally described as all powerful God. We recited this morning Shir L'Yom Revi'i, El Nikamot Hashem. It is the God, the powerful God, who will seek vengeance against all of our enemies. That's one. Upiresh Shaddai, Omar Rashi, Sheyesh Dai Be'elohut L'chol Biryeh. Fine. Now he's going to quote Rambam. U'b'sefer Moreh Nevuchim Piresh Harav. And in the book of Moreh Nevuchim, the Guide to the Perplexed, the Rambam explained, Kilomar, She'eino tsarich b'mitziyut mashinimtza. God himself needed absolutely nothing on this world that he himself created. Absolutely nothing. He had the capacity to exist as a God with nothing created in this world. And velo bikiyum mitziyuto lizulato. And nothing is necessary for the existence of God because he needs absolutely nothing. So what does El Shaddai mean according to the Rambam? A God for whom existence depends on nothing. The only thing God needs is to be himself. That's it. Shaddai, with his presence, he needs nothing in this world that he created. Now why would you, if you heard Rambam say this, why would you say, I have to say something, I don't like that. Tell me why. Tell me why.
God doesn't need us.
Right? So that's frame the question.
Why did he create man?
Why did he bother creating a world, and particularly with mankind?
For man.
And why did he? And if he wouldn't have created us, also we wouldn't exist. So the famous expression became known as "Ein Melech Belo Am." Yeah, sure, God can live, but how is he going to manifest all this great power that he has, And who's he going to be the king over? And at least he needed the creation of human beings. He needed them. Because in order to express Malchuto, there has got to be somebody who accepts HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the all-inclusive creator of everything. And so it's difficult to say, in the abstract world, God does not need anything. Nothing that He created was done for Him. He doesn't need anything. He's perfectly content to sit in a world of tohu vavohu, where there's nothing going on. But it's not really true. Because without it, there is no reason to, you can be a melech, you can't be a melech without people. So some are not terribly thrilled with Rambam's interpretation based on that. Then he quotes Rabbi Avraham, we'll see him a little later. Skip to the next bracketed line. V'tam lahazkir ata zehashem. And the reason why this name of God is introduced specifically right here, it was not introduced earlier, ki bo ya'asu hanisim hanistarim latzadikim. Because with this name, He will provide miraculous deeds unto righteous people, lahatzil mimavet nafsham, to spare their lives, ulechayotam bira'av, and enable them to continue to live despite the fact that there might be famine. Velif dotam bimilchama miyad cherev, and to spare them at a time of war when the dagger is being pointed at them, they will be spared. Kechol hanisim hanaasim li Avraham ula avot. As we have already seen and will continue to see, all of the miraculous deeds that Avraham and all of the other avot engaged in. Now, we're going to continue. It's a nice idea, but he doesn't really answer the question that he just asked. What question did he ask us by not asking a question? When he made his opening statement, what did he say?
He's supposed to explain why he
should die. Right. No, that he's doing. But
why do we need two separate names?
What did he tell us in his opening line, which he didn't really answer?
That God can exist all by himself.
No. What did the Ramban open up his words? What did he open up?
Each name of
the Shem. Ata lahazkir, hatam lahazkir, ata. What is ata now?
Now.
Okay. Right. So what is he answering? Because the name Shaddai means that God, who is powerful to do anything that is necessary to spare the Avot. And eventually he's going to expand it. Not only the Avot, it's to Am Yisrael as well. So what question? He just made a statement and he didn't tell us what the answer to that statement was. What was the answer? What was the question?
Why now?
Does he answer why now? If the Ramban wants to follow through, where would you have put the introduction of this name? We've already learned everything that's happened to Avram in his life since the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha. It's almost 2 years already. So what events happened in his life that you would say, oh, that's a good place to put it. Where? What? That hasn't happened yet.
Uh-huh.
That's in another 2 years.
Yes.
When he was in Mitzrayim. And what happened? Sarah was taken, and nothing happened to her. And what happened to him? He suddenly gets enormous wealth. Maybe that would have been a good opportunity. Or where else? There is a battle of whom against whom? The four kings. How many people does Avram go with? We know exactly, because the Torah tells us. 318 people against 5 mighty kings. And he walks out unscathed. That would have been a nice time to tell me, El Shaddai, that God has the capacity to create miracles, to take them, Mecherev Milchama. Why does he necessarily put this here as an introduction to Brit Milah? Yes.
Maybe it's following his masa on the thumbnail, so that this grid that he's now making is now extending it to Bnei Israel, not just the individual.
But he made a previous brit. That would have been my third choice. He made a brit with Avram called the Brit Bein Abtarim, at which time he solidified his promise to give them the land. So that would have been a perfect place. Yeah.
Maybe because this brit has actual participation of a human being in it. In other words, Avram has to do something as part of this brit. All the other brit, Hashem was just doing it for him and we were accepting it.
Okay, perhaps. I don't have a good answer. Why? That's just, if the Ramban walked in, I would ask him that question. You made a statement that he's mentioning it now. What have you suggested thus far to tell me why specifically now, not previously, in our interactions with the Avot? But it's not only that the Avot, U'kechol, second to the last line, Haba'im Batorah, Beparshat Im Bechukotai, Uparshat v'haya ki tavo bibrachot uklalot. Everything that will be described in two parshiot, where the brachot and klalot are recorded, brachot and klalot at in the middle of parshas Bechukosai, and the brachot uklalot that were offered at the in the middle of parshat ki tavo. Shekulam nisim. Turn to the next page. Shekulam nisim heim. Now look what he's going to tell you. Ki ein min hateva sheyavo hagishamim beitam ba'avdeinu ho Elohim. Nature, if you leave rainfall to nature, there's no particular pattern in identifying when it rains and when there is a drought. There's no particular pattern. That it seems to be, you know, somewhat haphazard. Maybe a meteorologist, you know, who looks out the window and he says, "Oh, it's raining. That's what I got to report on the news. It's going to rain today." Of course, it's raining. But maybe if they would explain to us how they figure it out, that, you know, okay. But the Torah says that rain is not going to be haphazard. It's going to come v'nasati gishmechem bi'itam. So who remembers what Rashi says is bi'itam?
Friday night.
No, what? Exactly. Everybody eats and is ready to hit the sack, unless you have to go to 20,000 shalom zachar. That's all. Other than that, you know, that's why when we used to have a shalom zachar every week, I would pray for girls. So, didn't work. Yeah. So continues to run. That's not something that takes place in nature. I, God, have to arrange that rainfall will be at a time when it doesn't bother anybody. There is another version that it's Wednesday night. Why Wednesday nights? I don't know. Some say it's Belele Revi'i. There are two different versions in the Medrash which Rashi cites there. And Velo Shiyu Hashamayim Kabarzel Ka'asher Nizra Bashana Hashvi'it. And it is not absolute nature that during when we don't follow HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and what did we violate? We violated the laws of the Shemitah. That's what the Torah tells us in Parshat Bechukotai, that you will you'll be subject to exile because they worked during the sabbatical year, and the Torah says the punishment will be v'hayu shamecha barzel. Your skies are going to be like iron, no rain whatsoever. That's not a natural event. That because people work during the sabbatical year, that means there's not going to be any rain. That can't be a natural reaction. That's God exhibiting His power unto Am Yisrael. V'chein kol hayeudim shebatorah. Every single promise ever made in the Torah, if you will sit and think about it for 20 seconds, these things are not going to happen in the natural flow of events. Aval kulam nisim. All of those were miracles. You know, and even the number 70, where we were exiled for the first exile for 70 years, we were in Babylonia. And just exactly after the 70th year, Koresh gives permission to come back to Eretz Yisrael and to build the second Beit HaMikdash. You know, and Chazal understood why it was 70. Because for 490 years, they had abandoned Shemitah. So there were 70 Shemitot that they abandoned during their course of living in Israel. So God said, you're going to be, for every time that you abandon the Shemitah, yeah, you're going to have a year in exile. Exactly. That also requires some interference from God. That's not a natural event. That should be exactly 70 years, and then suddenly the Persian king allows you to come back and build a Beit HaMikdash. It's unheard of. Avol kulam, line 3, nisim, ubekulam, tit na tseyach ma'arechet hamazalot. And with each and every one of them, what are the mazalot? And the Rambam refers to these all the time. The constellation. Oh, that's correct. So, but what does the Ramban fully agree with? What does the Ramban agree with by making this statement? Exactly, that they have power. These constellations have some type of capacity to dictate what's going to happen to their subjects. There is no doubt. And that's why, as you correctly pointed out, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Ein mazal li Yisrael. We are not determined by any type of cosmos, nothing, no forces. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is only ours. And the Rambam, you know, was very, he didn't get to, but he would have been very upset with the Ramban had he said that. Because the Rambam says over and over that the mazalot are just absolute nothing, have zero powers whatsoever, zero powers. And the Ramban's counter-argument would be, if they have zero power, wouldn't rational people see that they're a bunch of nothings? Why would God have to repeat His warning against accepting these constellations and all kinds of power if they were worthless? After 5 minutes praying to them, nothing happened. You realize they're worthless. Why do I have to spend the whole Torah warning them 70 times alone in Sefer Dvarim against Avodah Zarah? 71 times the Gaon counted. And that's what it was. Akum Ovdei Kochavim Umazalot, people who worship the stars and various constellations. Elosha'ein bohem shinui mimin hagoshel olam kinisim hana'asim al yidei Moshe Rabbeinu be'eser hamakot ubekriyas hayam v'haman v'habe'er v'zulatam, etc., etc. All of these things don't happen in the world of nature. There is no such thing as manna falling from heaven based on the laws of nature. There is no such thing as water turning to blood based on the laws of nature. And so on and so forth, says the Ramban. And that's what it means. This name is indicative of the fact that there is enough power within me. I am the El Shaddai, who is powerful enough to enable Am Yisrael to be exempt from the normal course of nature. Because in the normal course of nature, nothing that is described in the Torah is ever possible to take place. Either in a positive sense, such as rain coming exactly at the right times, or no rain over a long period of time because you're transgressing, and certainly none of the makot associated with Yetzias Mitzrayim. Absolutely none of those will ever happen in a normal world. Yeah.
The same way a man would not have a child when he's 99 years old.
Excellent point. Some comment and even think that the Ramban himself is alluding to it in 2 seconds. Excellent point. And that's why it's here. That's precisely why it's here. Correct. So even though he didn't explain it to us initially, we'll put it in 2 seconds. V'lochein amar ata li Avraham Avinu. Now God introduces himself with this name. Ki hu hatakif haminatseyach sheyigbor al mazlo v'yolid v'yeh brit beino ubein zaro le'olam sheyeh chelek Hashem amo. And therefore it's mentioned right here. Because Avram is going to be doing something that most people can't do. You can't have a child when you're 99 years old. And when you undergo a surgery like Brit Milah, a lot of people are going to succumb to the surgery, and he was able to survive it. Ubiritzono yanhigeim lo yihyu tachat memshelet kochav umazal. God is now under the direct control. The Am Yisrael is under the direct control of God, not at all a star or any other constellation. Ure'e, v'da ure'e, and I want you to know something. Ki Avraham Avinu, lo hiskir bidvarav, shem yudhei. He never ever spoke to God or mentioned God's name just with yudhei vavei. Rak b'tziruf Hashem hakatuv ba'alav dalid, o b'tziruf el elyon imo. Either he mentioned God's name Yud Hey Vav Hey with another one, Aleph Dalet Nun Yud Adonai, or sometimes he would do it with Avram Hashem El Elyon Konei Shemayim Va'aretz. We will see that shortly. V'yaskir B'inyanav Elohim, and sometimes God is referred to as Elohim. V'chein Yomar Hashem Elohei Hashemayim, like later on Hashem Yira'eh Al Makom HaMikdash HaAtid. That was only in relationship to the Beis HaMikdash, not necessarily to Avram. The Yaakov Tamid, Hizkir Tamid El Shaddai. Yaakov also constantly uses the name Kel Shaddai whenever interacting with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yeah. And then he continues. Moshe Rabbeinu, now going to page 27, Lo Yazkir Kein Le'olam. Moshe never used the name El Shaddai. Never. The Imtizkeh Tavinzeh Kulo. If you will be lucky and privileged, you will eventually understand what I'm talking about. So often when the Ramban uses that phrase, he uses it very frequently, and it means he has something in Kabbalistic literature, and I'm not even going to bother telling you it because it's a waste of my time. You're not going to understand it anyhow. That's one possibility. Here he tries to share with us what this Kabbalistic notion is, and then you try to understand it. Mimasha amru b'masechet Yevamot, kol hanevi'im nistaklu Ispaklaria she'ena me'ira. All prophets prophesied with a crystal ball that was not completely illuminated. In other words, God gave them clues as to what's going to happen. Didn't show them exactly what's about to unfold. He gave them a clue, and they had to figure it out. However, Moshe nistakel be'is Paklaria Hami'ira. Moshe, however, offers prophecy and he sees everything clearly. Now, he's trying to explain what with this piece of information? Why Moshe never used the word El Shaddai? So, what do you think he has in mind by saying this? How is this imagery about the difference between prophets and Moshe? How is that going to explain why Moshe never felt the need or was asked to speak in that language? Why not? What would you say?
The promises weren't enough. He wanted to see it happen. He didn't need it.
No, that's just it. He didn't need it.
He
Exactly. So maybe he's borrowing this idea that Shaddai relates also to all these haftachot. Moshe doesn't need that because he actually sees what's happening. If you see what's happening, obviously it's going to happen. So Moshe never ever was simply given hints, and that's why we just read yesterday that there would lo kam be Yisrael kimoshe od ashe yidao Hashem panim el panim.
Moshe was closer to Hashem, so Moshe could almost, like a child, challenge his parent, and his parent can get angry at him, but still have a relationship.
Yeah, I like that. You know why? Because this. Only Moshe challenges God.
Right.
That is correct.
They don't do any of that. Moshe
had a relationship.
Yes, a very. That's correct. No doubt. Yeah.
Could you put all these views of Shaddai together and say their response to uncertainty? And Moshe didn't have uncertainty that had to. Whether you're responding to whether uncertainty, whether God has the power to do it, or I'll keep the promise, or whatever the deal is.
Nice.
He was with
nice. Yes.
I don't exactly agree with what you just said. I mean, Avraham said, "Hat his pet, tzadikim rasha." You know, he doesn't just take.
Avraham says what? Right, that time he does challenge God, Haftispet Sadikim Rasha. Are you going to, we'll learn that in Parshat Vayera with the people of stone. Yes. Yeah.
Moshe could see so clearly, how do you explain why he's saying to God, why he's sending a power over there with a disaster? Like, it sounds more. It's not something who has such. It seems like God's annoyed in general.
So the Ramban would respond to that comment, that there was no vision given to Moshe and Nevuah that when you go to Paro, he's going to respond to you. He didn't have such a vision. He was just told, go to Paro. Okay, go to Paro. I have no idea what the expectation is. The message, he didn't have to figure out what God wanted him to do. God told him, go to Paro and say X, Y, Z, which is exactly what he did. To the Avot, he would not be in a position to tell them, go to Paro. He'll show them something in a vision at night, Bachalom, and they'll have to figure it out, where should I be going and what should I be saying? In that respect, Moshe had absolute clarity. But we don't have to say necessarily that God already provided an image and Moshe blew it because he didn't see it. That the end of the result of the dialogue was not shared between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe. Had it been shared, that Paro is going to say, at times that's what happens. At times, Hashem tells Moshe he's going to say no. So he knows he's going to say no. And that first time, he didn't. HaKadosh Baruch Hu just told him, go to Paro and ask him, to say, Shalach et ami v'yavduni. That's all he said. So that's a third interpretation about the name of El Shaddai. If you now take a look for a second at page page 99 for a second. I bracket on the left-hand side the Radak. The Radak's going to make a very powerful statement, and not all agreed with him. Vahi Avram ben Tishim Shana v'teisha Shanim Achar Od Shlosh Esrei Shana Militzavoto Al Hamila. After 13 years, having commanded him to undergo milah, kideshi yazkin yoter. Now, in our text, does it? When does? How old is Avram when this parsha is about to unfold? How old is he? 99. Now, what did Radak just say?
13 years ago.
Exactly. When the Torah tells us that Avram was 86 years old, That's when the Avram ben Shmonim Shana v'Sheish Shanim beleded Hagar Kishmal Avram. That's when God told Avram about the Mila. It doesn't look like that at all in the text. It looks like first we are told that Avram is 99, then God tells him, Hitalech lefanai veheyeh tamim, and I'll tell you about the Brit in a second. Ibn Radak just starts off trying to pull the wool over us. That there were 13 years after he commanded Avram for the Brit Milah, Kideshi Yazkin Yoter, so that he should not circumcise himself at 86, but rather wait till 99. V'yagia ad me'ah, v'yihye hanes yoter gadol. Then the miracle will be even bigger. Shiolid, v'hu ben me'ah, he's 100 years old. Ulaharot ahavat Avram lo'el la'asot kol ha'sheyitzaveyu. To demonstrate Avram's love of God, that he's willing to do anything. Okay? Rab David Kimchi, the Radak, just walked in. What do you want to ask him? Okay, first of all, what did he base it on? And tell me what you would ask the Radak based on his own interpretation. Based on his own interpretation, what could have happened knowing, I'll give the hint, how long did Avram live? 175 years. So, why not wait till he was 150, 160? Why 13 years? That was it? Now all of a sudden you think it's the right time? Why? Do it at 150. Yeah.
And why is 99 any better or older than 87? I mean, either one of them.
Yeah, I agree. So, again, our point is, commentaries make statements, and it's our obligation to try to digest it, and if it's difficult, to state the difficulty. That's our task in learning. And that's why we always say, "Fenakasha shtarpnenish." Nobody ever dies from asking a question. And the answers are not even that important. As long as you know the question, then you are comprehending what is being said. If you know the difficulty, you know, then you comprehend what is happening. So the Radak says something, I have no idea how he got to this conclusion. He doesn't introduce that. And certainly Sarah was, also very old. She didn't live till 175, but we could have had the miracle. Avram was 10 years older than her, so she was 90. We could have pushed it up. He could be 110, and she could be 100, or push it up 20 years, she'd be 120. Could have been the same thing. Right. Yes?
When we talked about Noah's generation, didn't it say, or his immediate descendants, that those who waited longer to have children were meritorious?
Yeah, we did.
So isn't this in itself, I mean, if we take that and apply it to this,
they lived longer, definitely.
But those who went 130 years without having right. a first child, wow, this was a uh-huh. great thing. So in this case, wouldn't we say the same thing?
Perhaps.
To extend the time until his perfect, till his progeny.
That's possible, but the only thing is, we've learned already about Sarah complaining about not having a child. She wasn't prepared to wait any longer. She was looking to have a child at her earliest opportunity. So I don't quite understand how he comes to that conclusion. And now he says something else. Shetzivo limor b'sara l'tovu hu zakein ben tzadik shana v'kolcho toshash. He was very weak already. Here comes another critical line. V'tzivahu lamul kodem sheyetze mimeav Yitzchak. Avram was commanded to circumcise himself before Yitzchak will be born. Kidei shiyeh Yitzchak mizera kasher yoter al yidei mitzvat ha'el shina'aseh bo'ever hahu ulahagdil hapele. Why is Avram being told to have a Brit Milah now? Because we want Yitzchak to be born from an individual who was already circumcised, as opposed to not being a father who was not circumcised, who will have a given birth. And he claims that that it's going to enhance Yitzchak's status as a Zera Kasher. Zera Kasher. Now that would mean today, any Jewish child whose father did not engage in circumcision would be recognized as a, not as a Zera Kasher. That's the conclusion. And that's why many, many authorities did not like that statement at all. Because there have been plenty, there had to have been plenty of Jewish male who did not circumcise, either because they weren't interested. At times it was legislated against, many times in history. And their children, nobody looks, has ever said that their child is less than a perfect, holy member of Am Yisrael by virtue of the fact that the father had not engaged in circumcision. Yeah.
Yitzhak is different. He Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov were forging the Am Yisrael. So in order for that to take place properly, Yitzhak needs to be born to somebody who
If this one, if God had not legislated it here, so then what would have happened? He would be born perfectly without Brit Milah. So what created the imperfection was the fact that God said, from here on in, I want, in order to be complete in my eyes, I want you to be circumcised. But had God not said it, you could be a perfectly, Yitzchak could have been a perfect child based on whatever mitzvot Abraham had to observe.
It's different than Kasher.
What? Okay, it's okay. I just find it a little, and as I said, many were not terribly happy with the ki hamilah mechaleshet ha'ever. Circumcision makes the individual weaker. V'hayanes al nes. There was a compounded miracle. She yolid ben meyah. He will have given birth at age 100. V'od shiu evaroi chalush yoter mishahaya kodem hamilah. His body was weaker than even after the Mila. Than before the Mila, he survived. Okay, that's Radak. And he also has an interesting read on Anil Kel Shaddai, and we'll continue with this next Devach. And there's also a major piece from Breuer, Rabbi Breuer, on Brit Milah, and the relationship that he sees between, he sets up a parallel between Noah and Avram and subsequent Avram. Starts with Adam Arishon, that there are concepts that keep repeating itself, Adam to Noah to Avram. So we'll do that next week as well. What? That's correct, because they didn't circumcise. That's correct. But that the pasuk says, "Kol orel lo yochal bone."